Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, listening audience. Thank you for tuning in to Talk Straight and being a part of a national dialogue designed for proactive change. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. I'm grateful again to engage each and every one of you in very important conversation. I need your help as I endeavor to take this message and the conversation we share on air to targeted cities and urban areas across America with the hope and desire to improve the quality of lives by engaging communities and proactive strategies. You can be of great help by going to our webpage, www.bfcinstitute.com. Click on the donation tab or the contact us tab and find ways that you can assist us by either purchasing our items or just making a donation on our secure PayPal site. If you are a business or someone who would like to make a corporate level contribution and you would like more information, please give me a call at 615-498-4669 or send me an email at bfcinstitute@gmail.com. That's bfcinstitute@gmail.com, or give us a call at 615-498-4669. We are glad to share with you and provide you all the necessary information to help you make the decision to support us in our traveling lecture series.
Well, good evening, and welcome again to another episode of Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. Grateful to be back with you again and that you can join us. We appreciate every bit of conversation, dialogue, and please know that it is our honest intent to take your conversation, your best ideas, and to put them to work in the interest of improving the quality of lives for all. All right? Talk Straight is a podcast format that is designed and sponsored by Building Families and Communities Institute, which is a research and educational arm of a Nashville, Tennessee-based nonprofit organization, Building Families and Communities Mission Incorporated. Yours truly is the chief educator and lecturer, and we're having this conversation because all across urban America, we have issues, and sincerely want to do what we can to address those things. The number to give us a call right here, 657-383-0944. Again, that's in the studio tonight, 657-383-0944. Be happy to entertain your question, your comment. You can also do that by going to Facebook and posting a question and or comment. Like our page, engage us. We're always happy to do that. We'll share as much information as you'd like for us to share with the listening audience. Looking forward to Pastor Ricky Waller, our regular co-host, to join us. And look like we got a caller two in queue already. But we'll get to it. We're going to do our monologue, and we'll get right to it. For the last couple of decades, we've heard a lot of conversation about being tough on crime across America. In reality, little has been done to remedy the root cause, though, of criminal behavior, okay, particularly in urban America. Now that the nation seems to be more polarized, separate than ever before, the mere suspicion of someone's character, that they are not right, and more importantly, they're not like us, for many people is an intent for them to commit a crime. Tonight, we're talking from the topic, how to effectively address urban American crime. Now, I have personally been in meetings and sat and spoke with people on different levels, preachers, politicians, legislators, business folk, everyday people about this issue, about crime, and you get a variety of responses. And I'm not sure that we're all on one accord, and that's very important. We know that the prison systems are designed supposedly to address crime. You know the story. If you've been around America anytime, you see where that's going. All right? So tonight, that's what we want to speak from, that conversation relative to crime. And we appreciate you following us on Facebook or joining us here live. Again, the number to give us a call is 657-383-0944. And we go to our monologue, and then we open up our phone lines, and let's have a dialogue here. All right, this is November 15th. Wow, 2018. Time is getting away from me. Again, the topic is how to effectively address urban American crime. Romans, the 13th chapter, first through the fourth verse, read, "Let every soul be subject unto the higher powers, for there is no power but of God. Powers that be are ordained of God. Whosoever therefore resisteth the power resisteth the ordinance of God, and they that resist shall receive to themselves damnation. For rulers are not a terror to good works, but to evil. Wilt thou then not be afraid of the power? Do that which is good, and thou shalt have praise of the same. Lastly, for he is the minister of God to thee for good. But if thou do that which is evil, be afraid. He beareth not the sword in vain, for he is the minister of God, and revenger to execute wrath upon him that does evil." Sounds like to me that there is a proper place and time for correction and punishment. All right. Now, in this conversation about addressing crime, I believe it's important, as I mentioned earlier, for us to be on one accord. So what I'd like to do is to define a couple of things. I'd like to talk about the law in relationship to crime, okay, and then define what crime is and ask a few questions about it. One, who commits crime? What does, where, I should ask, does crime take place? Why do people commit crime? And how does crime affect a community? And I want to offer you some suggestions about how we can effectively address this crime. And we'll do that throughout our conversation tonight, so I hope that you will join us in our dialogue here because this is very, very important there. And let's get through this right quickly so we can open up our phone line. So first, let's talk about what the law is. Now, the law is a system of rules for a particular country, state, or community, and it is recognized as the regulating or being useful to regulate the actions of its members within that state or that community, and to enforce the rules and regulations with some sort of penalty. So some people have an issue with laws or policies and regulations, but they're designed, and they come from people, all right? So let's define what a crime is. Crime is an unlawful act on part of a person within a community. It is punishable by the elected government authority put in place by, again, those who represent those people. There is no simple or universal definition of what a crime is, although there are statutory definitions set up by your legislator, those representing that government or that community. These have been provided for certain purposes, so it depends on what the actions or behaviors are to determine what sort of crime what degree of its criminal nature it is and that sort of thing. But dysfunctionally, let's look at crime as an offense or an act of harm, not only toward one person, but also to the community as a whole, society, or the state, a public wrong. I was out earlier, and I usually see our white brothers strapped. Now, we have concealed carry permits, and I understand that now there's an interstate compact where you can conceal and carry anywhere you are, and well, states that are part of the compact. That's most of the states, okay? And I usually see our white brothers doing it, but I saw at least three or four black brothers today that had their weapons, and they were open, and you can see they had them. We were in the store and places like that. They were very clearly letting folk know, I ain't with that. You run up, you're going to get done up. But that is the law now. And part of the driving force behind that law is that we've had so many criminal acts against innocent members, victims of society, that some are saying, look, we want to create more laws that make it easier for us to look out for ourselves. Okay? Well, let's talk about for a second who commit crime. An individual who decides, for whatever reason, that their interest or their situation, circumstances in life, justifies their action, which are deemed in direct contradiction or objection to the will of the majority of your community, those that have imposed these rules for everybody. Okay? So that's the person that's committing a crime. Not everything is a crime. But if you violate the laws and the policies, the rules that have been set up for everybody, then you fall under that banner of criminal activity. Well, where does the crime take place? Anywhere there's a community or group of people who have imposed rules, orders, one or more people violate those against the will of the greater number, that community is where the crime is committed. State by state defines crime slightly differently than their federal crimes that cover all 50 states. But nonetheless, it's in that community that you're in, wherever the offense takes. So why do people commit crime? Now, wherever you find a situation where there are social, economic, right, or political inequities, things are not equal, everybody's not getting a fair share. Now, that sounds to some people like socialism, doesn't it? But healthcare is a good example. Where everybody is not getting the same thing, there is a chance for you to have somebody to commit a crime. Now, just think about it. In America, this is a capitalist society based on the principles of free enterprise. But it says that you have the right to engage in systems of free enterprise to produce for yourself. If you have not been prepared on that line and you see everybody else living the American dream, happy-go-lucky, you hungry, and you struggle, sometimes people make up in their mind, look, I'm going to get it the way I live. You understand what I'm saying? I ain't going to be sitting back home with everybody else doing their thing and not me. Wrong answer. Let's talk about that tonight. Is that mentality justifiable? Let's talk about that tonight. Okay. How does crime affect the community? Here's the problem. Remember, I just told you about I see more people carrying firearms now visibly. Okay? They're not ashamed to let you know, I got a piece. Okay. Well, whenever one or more individuals decide that what I got to do to survive, I got to do it even if it harms you, what you do is you make other people on guard, okay? And you cause that community to either say to the police, go get them, do your job, or I'm going to handle street justice myself. Now, here's the problem with that. Y'all know it. It leads to unrest, unnecessary violence, and anarchy. which is why it is vitally important that in any healthy society there be law and order, there be structure and discipline. But again, if an individual misses out on that growing up, guess what? In a tough spot, right? Just because you missed it don't mean anyone else has to be your victim, okay? So, Doctor, what can you do about that? What you mean by how to effectively address it? Again, there is no specific definition that we can assign to a crime. It depends on the circumstances and what the laws are for the state in which you are a resident, okay, or the country. But generally speaking, consider this. If a person has committed a crime and has been duly charged, convicted, tried, and convicted, I should say, they're now under this halo of a felon, a criminal. Is there hope for it? Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, I would argue that one of the first things we have to do is to isolate them from the triggering environment or the trap. My good friend Pastor Ricky Wallace talks about all the time this thing called a trap. I went further to say that it's the ghetto trap syndrome, a certain set of socioeconomic conditions that cause people to engage in these behaviors. Well, prison is really like grown folk time out. You pull you away from everything else, supposedly for you to think about what you done wrong and figure out how to get it right. Well, unfortunately, cats are going to jail now, and they just lay it down for whatever time they get. When they come out, they're no brighter for it. In fact, they learn how to be a criminal while they're locked up. So is the criminal justice system really effective serving its rightful purpose? Interestingly enough, I talked to our local sheriff here, and I appreciate him really trying to bring more treatment more than just punishment. You can't punish your way out of this. You take a child and you put them in a room that has all sorts of instruments or objects that they can hurt themselves. See, I don't know any better. You got to ask yourself, who put that child in that dangerous area? So if the child becomes harmed, who do we hold accountable, right? So there is some responsibility. Now, what we have to do is to focus again on, if we're going to re-enter them back into society after they've completed their time, how do we best prepare them? I would argue that we have to take individuals who are either at risk to commit the crime or have committed the crime and provide a different therapeutic type of environment for them, okay? Some sort of treatment or relocation. That does cost money. You may ask where we get that money. We can talk about that tonight. Focus on deliberate social redirection. Now, what you should have got in your family is information on how to be a healthy, productive citizen of your community. Something happened, though, right? We know that there's a major breakdown in the family. I'm convinced that one major key component is to make sure that we help revitalize families, even for those who have just up. And yes, committed crime or offense against the will of society. Our neighborhoods have to be restructured and designed. Those neighborhoods are made up of families. They all have to share a common value against illegal or unlawful acts and encourage one another to be in order. Family, neighborhood, in the larger context of your community. There should be support for this transition, this proactive, positive change. And lastly, can't put a man out there and expect him to eat and you don't show him how to eat, you don't have a mean. So there needs to be some sort of purpose or focus intent to help them develop themselves economically so that they can be independent, not have to rely on their baby's mama or folk like that or the government and everybody else to take care of them. Yes. I'm talking about somebody that's even have a felony, particularly those who don't have major violent offenses. Now, some people are just so out of control, you just got to snatch them up and take them away from everybody else before you make somebody else drop them. I'm just talk straight. I'm just talking straight right now, that's all. But there are people who are not that far off, and all they need is just a little bit of support and guidance. There's hope for them, all right? Now, I'm getting ready to open up that phone line, but I want y'all to listen. Tupac and Scarface, a few years ago, had a song that spoke to this, and I think this will help us a little bit in our conversation. It'll certainly help me because I think they were right on it. Listen what they say.
People would frown, but
But guess what? It takes more energy and muscles to frown than it does to smile. So, hey,
exactly.
Sometimes you just got to look at it and laugh at it, man. You know what I mean?
Man, you got to look at it like I can overcome this, and I
watch
can
out.
Be better at it while I'm doing it.
Right.
That's my situation.
Hey, Lou, the devil came the other day, started clowning, cutting the monkey in front of me. I just looked at him and laughed. Man, go sit down somewhere. Ain't nobody playing with you.
Right. Hey, you definitely can't give him no glory.
No, man. You know what I'm talking about. You know what I'm talking about.
I do. I definitely do, man. I miss you, man. It's been a long time.
Right.
Glad I got the night to talk to y'all tonight, so I'm going to make it worth it.
I got some good news, Louis.
We're
off the campaign trail, and I got Pure in my sights, man. I got Pure in my sights. I'm going to have to roll up on you, man. I'm going to roll up on you.
I got some good news, too.
Okay, what's
that? We got open arms for you.
What? Okay, it's fast while it's on like popcorn now.
Man, let's go, man. You deserve it. Hey, not only do you deserve it, the people deserve to hear what you have to say.
Well,
so I can't wait for you to come this way on your campaign trail. Like,
well,
you ain't even got a rough office for this. You just got to.
No. That's right. We're done with the political campaign. We're on a campaign to improve lives now, big brother. That's where we are now.
I can't wait for the people to hear you. That's all I ever wanted to hear. Would you to say that you was coming this way for the people?
Lord be
they,
I am gonna be that
people like you. That's what they missing. They missing people like you, who understands that it doesn't matter if you red, black, or green.
That's
you
right.
Got right.
That's it. All right. Well, look, let's bring 3072 in right quick. How you doing, ma'am? How are things there in Florida? And then we're gonna go.
Hey, they okay? They're all right.
Okay. Good. Family doing all right? You holding it down and that sort of thing.
Yeah. Everybody's doing as good as they can.
All right.
A little chilly here, weather-wise.
Y'all cold in?
Yeah.
Too? Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Good enough. So, any feedback on the monologue in terms of how we effectively address urban American crime? Is that how far was I off on that? I don't know how much you heard on the monologue.
I think you were on target, on point, and you were wondering where they went wrong. I think they were going in all the right directions to have a hunger or thirst after trying to sustain themselves and their lives with food, housing, and whatever else. But
right.
They went wrong when they started to maybe want to do more than that. And be greedy to the cost of other people.
I see.
Of other people. Yeah. So that, and from that, I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. I don't know.
Well, that's a good point. And I think it's important, and I'm coming to you, Don, just a second. I think it's important, 3072 and the rest of you guys, that even when people make a mistake, right? That they understand that while you don't need to be dogged out, you do need to understand that it's important that you work hard to avoid repeating those same mistakes. And unless you
mm-hmm.
change certain aspects of your thinking and your actions, you're prone to go down that road again. Sometimes people feel like you're taking something away from me, right? And that's all they know. But if we don't open ourselves up to be educated to grow and expand, we tend to face that same type of thing. I appreciate Pastor Waller. His whole construct is, I knew how bad it was when I was engaged, and so now that's the energy and the drive behind me trying to change things and make it better. So I believe that is a very good position to start from. Let me go to Don. Don, you can comment on the idea of effectively addressing urban American crime?
Mr. Dockery, we're at the age now where our generation of young African Americans got to understand economics. Can you hear
me? Yes. Yes, sir. Go ahead. Yes, sir.
They got to understand economics. And the reason I'm saying that, I'm in Selma, Alabama, where the right to vote was, you know, the movement was born. But the strange thing about it, Mr. Doctor, African Americans don't sit on the board in any financial institution in Selma.
Wow.
So it's like taxation with representation. Taxation with representation. See what I'm saying?
Right.
So we don't know nothing about economics. We voting, but we are not economically connected.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Interesting, interesting. That's a good point, Don. And what happens is after people have voted and they went through the political process and they still don't get what they're looking for, they're angry. And they're ready to go to war. Don, I'm getting a little feedback from you. Where are
you?
Hold on.
Okay. No, I'm inside. But what I was going to say to you, Mr. Doctor, is this. The reason they are angry is, I'm going to say again, if you don't understand banking, if you don't understand accounting, you don't understand business math, if you don't understand that science, you're going to be angry.
Okay.
Now, once you learn that science, you can see why you are disconnected. You understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And why you are angry. You're angry because you don't know the science.
Right. Okay, good point. Pastor, what do you think about that? Will you respond to Don right quickly? I think you made a great point.
When you're talking about being angry, or I'm listening. And I'm hearing what he said briefly, because there was some background. I was hearing some in the background. And can you rerun what he said?
He was basically saying that young people are angry. Hold on one second. I think that's just where he is. He was basically saying that young people are angry because they don't have knowledge about economic independence and how to develop themselves. They don't control policies related to making money and developing the economy of the community, things of that nature. I think that's a good summation of what he was saying.
Yeah, okay. You know, when I think about the concept as a whole, about the law being, I guess you would say breaking the law, rather. You know, but the law was given but never obeyed, and it was not planned to obey the law. It wasn't like, why would they put a law in motion if they want you to obey it? You know, and you can't get a charge for a particular something that they have down there waiting for you unless they make it that way. For instance, you get caught, pulled over, and they check you and you have some drugs on you. Well, they have a certain thing that's required to be able to charge you with the drug. They got a name for it. And so no matter what it is, in whatever area it is in, and I just use drugs for an example, but that's part of the law. So if they say that you're breaking the law, you can be walking across the street in a certain location, and they call that breaking the law, if they choose to charge you for that. Now, that don't mean they're going to charge you for that, but if they want to stir up something, they say, well, okay, you just crossed. You should have went down the street and then crossed over. So it's so many different areas of what one would deal with. And then you come on around to show that a person, you know, to be smiling and still, you know, put a knife in your back. You know what I'm saying? Versus a person that was frowning. He could be frowning because there are some things going on that, you know, that's causing them to be there where it's a pain or something like that. But in the midst of it all, I like to encourage, you know, the people to know that God is an able God, that he can do for us what we are unable to do for ourselves. So the best direction that I would suggest for anybody, especially being lost, in my ignorance, I was able to admit, you know, that I'd done things that they would say, you're breaking the law. And if they had told me and put a sign up outside where I live at, say, if you do this particular thing, they will lock you up, but they didn't have no sign up, you see. Because if they put a sign up, I just may not do it, you know.
I get you.
So how can they charge me with it if I don't do it? And that's the thing about the law. They don't want you to just stay free from breaking the law. You know, it doesn't do them any good.
Well, hold on one second. Hold that thought, Pastor. I got a caller in from 314-4644. Welcome to Talk Straight. We're talking about how to effectively address urban American crime. Question or comment there, caller?
Well, it's a complicated matter. You know, blacks flee. Pretty good. Blacks flee from those areas. And let's talk about black people. Leave everybody else out of the picture. Blacks flee from those areas for a host of reasons. People don't move in those areas for another host of reasons. You know, they're redlined area because of crime, bad schools, so on and so on. But if you can't effectively address one, the education, I think that parents should have a right to put their children in an educational environment that best suits their long-term plans and goals. That includes school choice with vouchers. And then you need to come up with some plans that would help the kids that's left behind. When you're coming from a dysfunctional family, then the outcome is going to be dysfunctional. You talk about what the police do. Police run wild in a community because the community itself let their employees run wild like that. And if you don't have a functional community, then your employees are going to do whatever the heck they want to, and that's what you see. So and then your politics is lousy. And we have to admit it, these Democratic-led cities have been nothing but a disaster for decades upon decades. Look at St. Louis. Since 1949, been ran by the same political party. You look at your New Jersey, your Milwaukee. So, I mean, it's an obvious solution that needs to be done. But to get through the politics, to get it done is a whole nother thing.
Well, you're saying something that's very true and interesting. When you look at it, though, and you look at the policies that govern these cities, and you pointed out some of the major urban hubs, right? And you look at how those policies have created certain socioeconomic conditions and or triggers. And Pastor Wallace said something that's interesting. He suggested that people are not aware of the civic expectations or how these things impact their day-to-day life, their growth and development, and then all of a sudden they get caught up because there's an expectation that I behave in a certain manner. Your point is well taken, that even, I know you like 3072.
Can I say something from the younger generation?
Hold on one second. Don't lose your thought, Louis.
No, I'm right there. I understand.
Okay, all right. Let me finish this out, then I'm going to go to 3072, Louis. Now come right
to
you.
No problem. Take your time. What you got to do.
I was running through Paul in St. Louis there. I think you made some valid points. But I would only add that when you think about the crime and why people leave, that's because, as you pointed out well, things are out of control, man. And nobody wants to be a victim of an out-of-control community. So they go somewhere where there's more control, where things are under control. I think that's a great point.
Well, you know what? To be honest with you, now, of course, you don't have men in the communities anymore. You have males that's not men. All right.
Wow.
And a lot of them coming out of single homes, which is led by a female. I don't care what you say. You can have some miracles, but females can't turn males into men. But if there was an effort to straighten things out, then it would be an outcry. People would be hollering and talking about it's barbaric and so on and so on. There's a way to straighten that out. And I direct the attention to those that is causing the problems. But then you got to deal with these people that be talking about it's inhumane and so on and so on and so on. But if you don't have no men in the community and complicated with all these other things, then you got what you got, chaos.
All right, hold one second. Let me go to 3072 and get her response. Go ahead, 3072, and then we'll go right to Louis.
Well, Okay, I was just going to add, the caller mentioned Democrat-ran cities or states. I'm here in Florida, and this is Republican. The crime rate here is oh, my God, it's astronomical. It's ridiculous. This is like number one murder capital here. So in many regards, I think as far as politics goes, that's like a hit and miss kind of thing. But they really need reform here. We were hoping to have a Democratic city. I mean, so, but no, it's rough.
Well, Miami's been Democratic forever.
Okay. Jacksonville is not.
So who's, do you have a mayor? What political party is your mayor?
We were going
there?
for Gillum, and I'm just here a year. The other.
He was running for governor. I'm talking about your mayor. In Jacksonville. Who's
I don't know our mayor here.
Okay.
I don't know.
Okay. All right. I don't want to get lost.
Okay.
Can you say something about anything about the mayor in Florida, in Orlando?
Yeah.
Go ahead. Go ahead, Lord.
I got friends in Broward County. I've never been to Florida. I want to go.
Okay.
Can't wait. I would love to go.
Okay.
I'm a black man from Peoria, Illinois. I grew up here, been through here. And if you look at the statistics, they say that this is probably the fifth worst place for African Americans to live in Illinois or outside Illinois. But what I'm trying to say is that it doesn't matter where you're from. You black. You black. You black. You black.
Well, now, Louis.
Listen to me. Just hear me out. It's already a misunderstanding about who you will be, not who you want to be. That's already painted on the tube. Like, no matter where you are, who you are, when you look up what it takes to be a black man in any state, they're going to look for the worst in it. So I live in Peoria, Illinois. This is the worst place for any African American to live. This is the fifth place that you will want to come to if you want to look for the worst place to live. I live here. I grew up here. I've been here my whole life. Nothing nobody could come and rescue me. Nothing nobody could do to save me. There's nothing nobody could do to change me. But you can do yourself. You could find the best in the position that you are in, which I feel like I have. I love my job. I love where I'm at. I love where I work at. But
let me ask you a question, Louis. Let me ask you a question. Who determines your quality of life? You or the government or someone else? Who determines
that? Neither. Only God, because I feel like given the choice, you'll always choose the better or the latter of the two.
Okay.
When you face with the situation of where do you want this job or you don't want this job, God would choose for you. You would definitely choose for that job.
Okay. All right. Well, that's interesting. Now, Louis, I'm gonna tell you something. I when I was running for state senate, I proposed a model to create businesses, right?
Right.
And I suggested that everyone that benefited from this government private investment as well as a personal investment model had to make sure that they offered at least 10 people to work with them in their business, okay? But now,
right,
at the end of the day,
let me ask you a question.
Hold on one second, Carl. At the end of the day, no one can put that business plan on paper and to manage that but you. So the government can't control that, and maybe through you, God will help give you the wisdom and understanding, but it's kind of on you to have to determine how you make a way for yourself.
You say you were running for politics. Who put you up to do that?
I put me up to do it.
All right, now let me say something. in this country, the United States, there's a tried, proven, tested method on how they work. Businesses control politics. Politics control your police. Business control your media because media needs business advertising dollars. So if a group of people, business people, came to you and told you what they needed to have done once you reached the state house, they would choose you, give you your marching directions. They would back and fund your campaign. And of course, you could do other things, but your sole purpose was because they sent you there. That's the way it works.
Hey, excuse me, sir. Who is this?
Hold on one second. Let me respond to you, caller. I hear what you're saying, and what you espouse are some of the teachings that Dr. Claude Anderson has shared over the years. I think that's right on point. Here's the difference about the campaign that I ran. I did not run one that was based on big business interests, but one that was based on educating the public to be self-sufficient and directive of what they wanted, okay? And then to organize them in such a fashion that through the power of their vote, they got that, then lastly they went and voted on that. That was the nature of my campaign. So I wasn't looking for big businesses to tell me what to do. In fact,
well, it doesn't have to be big business. You know, in St. Louis, when they elected the first black mayor, Freeman Bosley, some contractors, myself being included, sat down with him as a candidate and also Burvis Jones as a candidate and told him what we expect, what we need to see done if, in fact, they got elected. And they got it.
I can see what you. I think there's. We're not going to get into that right now, but there's a different set of circumstances in this situation. But I hear what you're saying. That's traditionally how it's done, and I appreciate that. I do appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but let's get back to the topic of how to effectively address urban American crime. And I want to focus on urban America. Lewis, you were trying to say something. Go ahead.
Yes. What I'm trying to say is, can you really focus for one second on what it takes to build structured society? Like, I mean, we're talking about people. You want to tell people how to live their life, but you don't want to tell them how to really live their life. You want to tell them how they should live their life and how you would live your life if you grew up in a structured society, but you don't want to tell them what it takes to live their life. And then when these people who grew up in a situation of where they have nothing else but what they have, living their life, come off to, if I could, quote unquote, ghetto life or hood life or whatever you want to call it, start doing just that because that's all they know. Everybody in the world ride down on them. What I'm trying to say is, as a man, as a human man, as a man who understand better, been through better, went to college and got trained on how to live a decent life or a decent, how can you teach them how to be better?
Okay, that's a good question. That's a very good question. And let me go back to my monologue to answer that, to respond to that. One of the things that I pointed out is the fact that there was something severely missed that led an individual to commit crimes, because you don't have to commit crimes. You don't have to violate the will. You don't have to violate the will of society, and you don't have to be out of order. But there are some things missing, and 4644 alluded to it. Whenever there is a breakdown in the dichotomy of your family, what do you mean by that, Doctor? I mean that in an ideal situation, there's at least two voices of authority that help shape the character of a child such that when they become an adult, they can sustain themselves socially, economically, politically, and the whole nine yards. And that's their father and mother. Unfortunately, too many young people in urban America come from the dysfunctionality, and that's I don't see that with disdain toward it. But they come up under dysfunctional circumstances, within their family, Lewis. And what happens is they have to try to adjust. And oftentimes their efforts of adjustment are deemed illegal or inappropriate, and it leads them in this position where they feel like they have to survive now and do whatever it takes to survive. This is a real deal. What I'm saying is it's important that people stop for a second and realize that the power of your life lies in your hands. Education is a major tool to help you understand what your resources and opportunities are to affect that power.
Pastor, that's exactly what I'm getting to, and I'm glad you said that because that's exactly what I'm getting to. When it comes down to it, and when you got to make the most crucial decisions and nobody else understands it, when all your family looking like, oh, you should do this way because so-and-so was that way, and you like, no, God's telling me I need to really buckle down, humble down, and do it this way. People will have to do that, and people will look at them as if they don't understand.
Yeah, that's true.
And you're going against
the
grain, but at the same time, it's for a necessary reason. It's for a cause. Nobody wants to be the cousin or the auntie or the best friend that looks that different because he don't want any more blood shit.
I get you. Well, I want to go to feel free to get in here, Pastor Wallen, in 3072 when you get ready. Don, are you still Don? I've been getting background noise from you, man, and it kind of interrupts our conversation.
Mr.
Are you there, Don?
Hey, Mr. Dockery.
Yes. Go ahead, Don.
I was going to say to you, I got headphones on. So when I pull my headphones off, I don't hear the noise that I hear when the hit with the earphones on. And what I'm saying, what I'm going to say to you is this. As soon as they put those boxes in these 911 buildings, they have a right to listen to us and interfere with us.
Okay.
That's what's going on. And then, Mr. Doctor, I was going to tell you, too. My brother that was on the police force, he called me last night, and he told me some things, and it was real shocking. So they are infiltrating, and they are listening and watching what we do.
Okay. All right. That's fine. Okay. All right. Well, let me go to 4644. 4644. I had a circumstance where I was engaging some young men, and they admitted that I'm hearing somebody else's conversation there. Okay, let me see if we can fix that. Okay, good. There we go. And I'm sorry, guys. And so what they said to me is they wasn't thinking about voting because as far as they're concerned, you got the Democrats and Republicans, the Democrats under the blue and the Republicans under red. They ain't no better than the Crips in the blood. What do you think about that, 4644?
Well, I think they are uneducated on the process. Me, myself, I supported and voted the president administration because of the campaign issues that was put out there during the campaign. And tax reform, immigration control, tariffs, so on, so on, so on. So, no, they are both of them not. See, as you move up into the economic spectrum here in the United States, then it's going to be more of you voting your interest. It's not the friendship. It's interest, permanent interest, not permanent friends.
Okay. Explain that to me a little bit more. When you say that, so is that a party interest or an individual interest that you're saying?
No, well, it's an interest. See, people come to this country this country was built on capitalism. It's the greatest country in the world for you to be able to extract opportunities from. People come in. You know, you talk about blackness. Nigerians don't have that problem. Nigerians are the highest educated, have the highest education attainment of Asians and whites. You have Nigerian households that have, as a group, higher household income than whites. So you don't see them out there marching. You don't see them protesting. You don't see them involved in Black Lives Matter because they're focused in a whole different area. So when you begin to extract and develop a economic stratum for your family in that, then your interest politically wise is going to change. You're not going to be for high taxation. You're not going to be for death taxes, for instance, where you can't pass on the money in your bank account to your kids once it gets past a certain level without it being taxed all over again. You know, you having more control over your own educational outcome. Well, you're not tied into public schools per se. There are some good ones, but then to be realistic, the majority of them just are not doing it. And black kids are getting slaughtered in these institutions.
Well, can I add something?
Go ahead.
Yeah, and all of that he named was great things to do and for an individual. But, and I hate to bring the Bible into it, but as far as for me, I personally would vote Democrat, not because I agree with everything and every policy or whatever they're trying to do, but they do tend to try to look out for people that can't help themselves as well. So at the end of the day, it's not just about me and my household, but it's about a world that we all have to live in. And if you look at it, we're making, like, when we go so individual, we're setting up traps, I think, to promote people kind of to commit crimes when they get desperate. And they don't feel like they have any other way, so that's what they do. They resort to violence, to robbery, to killing,
I agree with that. I agree with her wholeheartedly. But
well,
I may get
it
to
is.
Group, please. They're from out of state, so I just would like their input on for a moment. I didn't mean to interrupt you. I'm so sorry. But if I may give you knowledge who it is, they're from Grand Rapids, so I'm going to call them Grand Rapids for right now.
Okay.
Thank you. Right. They may say something, please.
Okay.
Hello. Can everybody hear me?
Yes, sir. Go right ahead.
Okay.
Welcome to the
First of all, I want to give respect to your radio station and
Thank
the fact
sir.
That you are trying to reach out to make a severe change in society.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Now, I'm from Grand Rapids, Michigan, but
okay.
I'm originally from Illinois, but this ain't about me. Now,
okay.
I'm going to have to separate the two from the politic expectations and versus what's really in this real world with these young people that's out here in the street. We all have the same common goal to reduce the violence and the unnecessary bloodshed of our youth.
Okay.
We have not just been attacked. We have been attacked for numerous of years. And I will allow anybody to interject and say anything that they would like to say to comply with what I'm saying. I'm not trying to take over your airway time. I understand that you're on a limited airway time. But we cannot do this overnight. This is going to take a collective effort to get things in check. These people, they are the results of the 60 babies when the 70s and the booming baby generations and people was taking acids and different drugs, that these people were born already with a disadvantage, not only from their color, but because people thought that blowing their minds would exclude them from the poverty and the different pains that they experienced. So now, the fact that we already had a check against us as black individuals, you are dealing with children now that has no respect for their parents, no respect for the order that we laid out for them. There's no longer the grandmother to check you. There's no longer the mother. The mother's more friends with their kids than they are a parent. The father has not been around. This is the result of being locked in bondage for over 400 years. People are still feeling the same effect that started from over slavery. It's the modern day slavery, and I will allow anybody to interject and say anything on that.
All right. Hold that thought right there. I wonder if 4644 would like to respond to that.
Yes, I can respond. See, we put too much emphasis on the wrong kids, the wrong youth. You got youth that is doing marvelous things. I give you an example. Those that's a member of the National Society of Black Engineers, at their last two conventions, one was held in Pittsburgh, one was held in Kansas City. One corporation hired 400 young black engineering graduates right off the convention floor, 2 years in a row, for a total of 800, and not including the rest of the corporations that was hiring young black engineers. So the emphasis has to be put on them and those that are trying to achieve what they're doing.
Well, sir,
what is it that they're doing right? What is it that they're doing right? What is it that their families are doing right, whereas they're not coming up as these statistics? We concentrate on the wrong end.
Well, sir, if I could rebuttal and have a little reply to what you just said.
Okay, go right ahead. Go ahead. Go ahead. Then we'll get someone.
Okay, if I'm going too long, I'll shut up. But you cannot compare children that's been privileged and had the opportunities for education and a two-parent household versus a child that did not know nothing but welfare recipient and one single parent. You cannot lump them all up into that category. I am so proud that our universities are being filled with black people that was motivated to be the best that they could be. But then that means that I'm supposed to ignore the fact that people were not allowed that same privilege.
Okay, exactly.
Well, that's what you just said.
Agreed.
What he just said is not true. And let me give you an example.
You're demonstrating the behavior
by talking over me after we gave you your opportunity to talk.
Hold on 1 second. Listen to him for a second. Let's hear his response.
That's not true is because there's programs that's set up in communities that allow people coming from whatever disadvantaged background that there are kids, whereas they can take part in these activities for free. Matter of fact, there's efforts to go out and try to recruit parents to direct their children into these areas where you have you have equipment, you have facilities, you have instruction that is totally free. It's free for them to get involved. And all the parents have to do is deliver them to these location for these programs, and they're designed to take kids from wherever they are and get them prepared.
Can I say something? Do I have any more time to speak, or am I being shut off?
No, we're not shutting you off, but we do have other callers.
I will respect that, and I can hold my composure.
Hold on 1 second, caller. Yes. Listen to me for a second.
Yes, sir.
What I was saying to you is I do want you to give a brief reply, and then we're going to go to 3072 and some of the other people that are on the panel. Go ahead right quickly. You want to reply to the gentleman that just finished speaking. Go ahead. You there? Okay, I'm not sure what happened there. All right, 3072, go ahead.
Yeah, well, I was in agreement with the other sir that was speaking, but the other gentleman, I don't know his number. He was saying earlier in the conversation how the public school system pretty much was a failure, but then again, he alluded to the public school programs being a good and valuable asset to those children in the lesser community. So, I'm a byproduct too of the hood, and it's just not the same when a parent is paying for a tuition at a private school or some charter school or something versus public school. So no, they're not going to be exposed to all of the same things. and they will not be as advantaged as the other children. I just
let me reply to that, please.
Oh, okay, go ahead, and then I want to.
I never said what you said. I said these programs are available. In the St. Louis area, you had a University of Missouri that provides this program on Saturday for a children coming out of whatever school setting they want to come from. You got the National Society of Black Engineers, which started back in 1972, and it has over 19,000 active members, but a total of 30,000 young blacks that's involved in that organization. They provide at the local level, they provide workshops where you can bring your child in on a Saturday around 10 o'clock and they stay up until 1 o'clock and they attend workshops which are designed to help them hone their skills. That's all free. We're not talking about it. And public school, charter schools are public schools. And I think you have some good ones that's designed specifically. You got the aviation charter school there in Michigan. You got charter schools that's along maritime training in Philadelphia. You got schools, matter of fact, you got charter schools that's centered around baseball in Florida. One in New York is centered around basketball. You got medical pre-med charter schools. Those schools are very good. They are utilized by parents using their choice to put their child where they think is best for them and not be locked in into something where the child is a bore.
Allow me to do this, 4644. I heard what you were saying, and I want the rest of the panel to. What I heard him saying is that if you see someone being successful, black, African-American, being successful, it's reasonable to ask the question, what are they doing, and how can I apply that to my situation? And what he's saying further is there are programs and services, and that's similar to what BSC Institute position is. What we want to do is to provide opportunities for people to change the circumstances of their life that cause them to feel as though they have to desperately engage in nefarious or illegal type activity. You don't have to. Sure. Just because you're black, don't mean you have to engage in those things. Don't mean you have to be poor. Does not mean you have to be underserved just because you're black. Those two are not mutually exclusive to one another. So I think that's a good point. Let me, 8112, is anyone still there on 8112 line?
Yes, sir. And he's okay, ready all right. To sign. Thank you.
I just want let me explain. I wanted the caller to understand that we were not running them off. We were simply trying to keep the conversation moving, that's all. But thank you for me. If you.
Yes, sir. I respect that. I understand that there's more callers on the line, and y'all being more generous with trying to give everybody their time. I'm not speaking from a black point of view. I have degrees as well. But
yes,
I came from the ghetto. I was born in the Robert Taylor Homes in Chicago, Illinois.
Oh, wow.
I lived in poverty myself. So I'm not trying to act like I'm better than anyone. What I'm trying to say is that we cannot expect certain individuals who was fed government cheese and listen, real quick. We cannot, as versus children that had 3 square meals a day, to respond in the academic world as the one that was deprived. All I'm trying to say is there's no excuse for this behavior that's going on in this world right now. We are committing genocide. At the end of the day, we are hurting our own people. But it's something that's been programmed in us for a long time. And there's programs that allow certain privileged children that's black. It's not about color no more. Okay, there is programs that allow certain privileged children to live a life of luxury. Okay, but there is programs that, because the mentality of that individual that's been deprived, they only know a criminal lifestyle because all they have been exposed to was criminal behavior. But we have to, once you reach a certain age and a certain point, like I did, you reach a certain point where what's beneficial for yourself. And then you try to reach out to those programs to benefit yourself and benefit your children.
All right. Let me, if you stay right there, please. You and I share a common, you and I share a common experience. I grew up in Washington Park Homes, the projects of Chicago, not too far from Robert Taylor. I used to get ran off from Robert Taylor a few times. But my point is that today, that is not my core experience. In fact, the caller from St. Louis, I can verify what he's saying because my son is a member of the National Black Young Engineers. He is a student at Case Western in Cleveland, Ohio, and he was just inducted this past year. And so his point is well taken, that if you avail yourself, now, point is, I take your point that everybody is not properly prepared and orientated to appreciate the value of certain opportunities. That's we can come in and we can make a difference to let our people know that if you want to stop young people from being desperate and engaging in these type of destructive, risky-type behaviors, you've got to change your mindset, you've got to change your behavior pattern, and you have to want to do different than what. Now, what happens is anytime you rely on the government and a party to dictate to you what values you should follow and embrace in order for you to be whole, and they suggest to you the only way you're going to make it is that you essentially eat out of our hands, that's problematic. I don't care what party.
You know,
any party.
You know another thing, too.
Hold on 1 second. Let me finish this thought. Any party, political party or group, that tells you that you must hang your brain up at the door when you come to have a conversation with them, they're a disservice to you. Walk away. Run, in fact, away from them because they mean you no good.
And you know another thing to go along with that. Another thing to go along with that too. Blacks have to do this themselves. Whites are not going to teach your kids how to take power from theirs. Nigerians are not going to teach your kids how to take power from theirs. If your kids are not there when the bell rings, that's less competition for their kids. So that's the way it has to be looked at. It's about competition. You have, you know, you want to make and give everybody the opportunity. Outcomes are not guaranteed. It's how hard and how much due diligence you put into it. You should be taking your kids to expose them to as much as you possibly can. They should be going to museums. They should be going to your universities where the lectures are free and they can sit there and listen and watch professionals tell a story. All these things are free. They don't cost no money.
No, sir, but can I please interject without being long? I will not engage in the into the idiotic jargon of what black people should be or should not be doing. We already have been set aside from the beginning. But we know now it's not to blame the white man. Now it's based on what you can do as an individual because the door has been open for all of the people before us who suffered the door open. But what I'm trying to say is that we have to have some understanding of that the fact that people have not just been denied of the privileges of people before them, but that they have been injected with being drugged. People have went on another level to the point where they have let their kids down. And that's because of the mentality of the slavery mentality. And not only that, it's a ripple effect to the point that you have people divide and conquer. You have some families that's able to provide their kids to museums and the different.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes, sir.
Do you teach your kids this?
My kids is all doing well. All of them doing very
well. All right,
well.
Hang on for a second. If you teach your kids that that's their boogeyman, my children have nothing to worry about competing with yours.
Right. I agree with you, sir. But each one teach one. I agree with that philosophy. But if we stick only on our household, then the rest of society is damned. Ain't no need of talking about what you care about what the rest of society is
your
doing.
Your household is your we.
You have clarity being at home. Charity begins at home. If I can't do for my household, how can I do for somebody else? I can't give nobody in this society no information.
Hold on one second.
Yes, sir.
Hold on one second. You guys are I think you're saying the same thing.
We are saying the same thing, but onto a certain degree. Because when we talk about privileges, we've been denied privileges for a long time.
So
go ahead,
so,
and I won't hold y'all up long because we can't solve this tonight.
Your point is well taken. African American history will validate your claim that there have been a lot of egregious things done to people of Afro descent. Okay, no doubt about it. No doubt about it. However, in 2018, there's an opportunity for you to move beyond that. Okay, and that's all. I think that's the core point here. But we got 14 minutes. Man, this thing is starting to get good now. And I don't want to be rude to the rest of our callers that are on here. Pastor Waller, a question or comment in 3072, and then Don will go to you. Pastor Waller, you want to say anything?
Let it flow. So I'm just listening, and I want to make sure that if anybody who made the law and why there is crime, you know, who actually put it together. You know, I would ask the question myself, and I would take a little ride down this avenue right here and say, did a black man make the law? You understand? I would ask that question. And so, you know, what it is that we're dealing with from my experience where I grew up at, and it doesn't matter how I look at it, if I want to be honest with myself, I can always look at the situation and say, man, I wonder why did I get so much time for this? You know what I mean? And then the other the group of people may not have got that much time. I wonder why that takes place. Can I use that and say, well, just because I'm black? I don't know. It's tough.
Okay. All right.
I follow you.
Okay. 36, man, time is getting away. 3072, what do you want to say right quickly? Don, I'm coming right to you, sir.
Well, I was just going to say that I still hold firm, and I do teach my children to not just, I mean, at the end of the day, after you've done what you're supposed to do and you've gotten what you need, don't forget about other people. Again,
absolutely.
That is the problem. And if we just all pack up and move to outer space, we still have a problem that we all should be concerned about in the urban area, in the black community. Sorry.
Sure. That's well stated. Let me go to Don. You there, Don? Don, can you hear me?
Mr. Doctor. Yes, sir. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to tell you, in the Montgomery advertisement Monday, it came up in the paper Monday that the Democratic Party, the African American Democratic Party here in Alabama, had money to campaign with, but the money wasn't being used. And some of the money in their entity. In their entity, some of the money was funded for educating our people in democracy. And that's the same thing you was talking about. You don't let other individuals control you. And, Mr. Doctor, I'm going to let you know, on the 19th, on the actual House seat of Benjamin Turner, we are having a meeting.
Okay.
You understand? There's no historical marker there.
I see.
There is none. So what you're saying, you're scientifically correct.
Well, so guys, here's and I hate to, but look at we got about 11 minutes before we get out of here. I want to try to bring this great conversation together. And at the end of the day, if we don't include anything else, I believe it's important to understand that in reference to the urban American experience, crime and if you don't want to be a victim or have to suffer the punishment or consequences of crime, the best thing to do is to work to keep yourself from committing those crimes. I've got to fall back on St. Louis because his comments are instructive in nature. And that is, there are examples of people done up in your background or in the general. All right.
Yes,
there are examples of people who have been successful at avoiding those type of social economic ills. It may do you well to ask, what did they do right? How can I apply that? Not that they're better than anybody. That's not the point. The point is that they've been able to avoid certain negative reoccurring circumstances. And, I think St. Louis' comments are instructive in that if you look at what somebody else has done to be successful, because you have the same opportunity, if you use it, there's a good chance you may be successful.
Absolutely, that is true.
I'm back on the phone now. I agree, disagree.
Well, let me tell you something. There's a formula that's been here in this country for a long time that's worked. You go to school, get a good education. You get a job, you get married. Let me tell you something. Your daughter will never know what to look for in a husband if she has never seen it played out between a mother and a father. What's she going to know to look for?
Right. Okay. Let me get her in before we close. Go ahead, Mama D. What were you going to say, Mama D? You said you agreed to disagree. What was your position?
Right. I agree to disagree for this reason, because each and every one of us has a different path called the walk of life. To say that, it just doesn't sound, I ain't got a clue about what you're talking about with that part, because you know what? I've seen some beautiful, including my mother, great women raise boys up to be grown men and never go to jail. I've seen some beautiful people that taught their sons, followed behind their mother's footsteps and their grandparents' footsteps, to grow up to be well-educated. I agree to disagree, because when you're looking in the mirror and you point your finger at somebody else, you better believe you got four fingers pointing back at you and a thumb.
Only one thing, though.
And you know one thing that makes an example, Sarah, real quick.
Which is what?
If you had strong men in your community, then these little hoodlums wouldn't be controlling and have you terrorized living behind bars and gates.
We're looking for
if you had strong men in your community, ma'am, can I finish talking, please? You're demonstrating something we don't want to show our kids.
Some of those children, they belong to somebody. As you call them hoodlums, it turned out to be professors, judges, police, firemen.
Okay.
Some of those hoodlums, as you call them, don't deserve to be thrown out the trash because you
As I was saying, if you had strong men in your community, you wouldn't have the criminality that's running buck wild, that's terrorizing the elders and also the kids in the community. If you had strong men that was a student economics in your community, then foreigners coming from the Mideast and Asians wouldn't be controlling the economy in your community. So all that plays out in the long run.
All right. Okay.
When it happens to one of yours, then look back and say, if that strong man as me being a father, none of us know everything, sir. And I close my comment with that.
Okay. So here's what we got to look at. Here's what we got to look at. There are some things that work, and there's a reason they work. And they don't just work for people based on their skin color or based on their size or their weight. They work because there is a protocol and there's a scientific method to it of success. Let's look toward opportunities to improve the overall quality of life for everybody. I'm one who's been fortunate to see both sides of the spectrum come up a little rough, but I'm grateful that I had the opportunity to become refined. That lets me know that there's hope for even young guys who are now in a rough situation to come out of that. There's nothing wrong with improvement. There's nothing wrong with expansion and growth and development. Absolutely not. And you don't have to feel as though you're beneath someone else because you're at a point where you're starting to improve yourself. That's not the way to look at it. We got 5 minutes.
Hey, Pastor. Hey, Pastor, I just want to step in for just a second when it comes down to the hoodlum. Who is defined to be the hoodlum? I mean, what does that define the hoodlum when you say, is that somebody that will never change? Or is that, you know, because that same hoodlum can become a messenger, if you understand what I'm saying, for the community. And that's the thing we got to consider. That's where change come in at. Somebody being a good example to let that person know who are called that. And or looked at that way, that you never know. You know, that could be the very person that changed the lives of many people because they found a way out. For some reason, it's called a trap. And how do I become that way? You know what I mean?
What you're talking about is exceptions. You want to concentrate on the norm, not the exceptions.
No, not the concentration.
Somebody's got the speakerphone on. It's causing all kind of problems.
Yeah, change can take place, though, is what I'm saying. So being an example is a good thing. We've got two types of examples, you know, a good and a bad. It's one with one follower.
Let me ask you a question, sir.
Yeah. Okay.
Being that you have limited resources, where do you expend your resources? Do you spend your resources on the young people that's coming up, that's doing the right thing, that's going to school, that's putting their head to the books and they're staying out of trouble? Or do you take those precious resources from them and apply them to those who didn't do those things, and now they're coming back, you know, decades later trying to change their life around? I think that you should.
I don't have enough time.
You should expend your resources with the young people that are doing the right thing.
Let's do this. We only have 3 minutes, man, and that's the best.
Yeah, you don't have much
time. Y'all really going deep on me. I like that. Can we bring this back next Tuesday? My goodness, that would be a great conversation right there. I'd like to frame our conversation around that. I hate that time has gotten away from us tonight because, you know, at the end of the day, let me just take the privilege of saying this. What we have is we need this kind of dialogue, okay? And what we really need to do is to be honest about how and why so many of the young people who I used to be called a hula. In fact, the police told me that I was going to be dead before I was 16 based on when he met me, the things I was engaged in. You understand what I'm saying? That can change, though. That's the beauty of it. That can change. That does not have to be your outcome. I believe if we can agree on anything else, we all can agree that you don't have to end where you start.
Right.
I believe that's a message we can walk with. Man, well, I sure hate to cut us off, but this thing gonna blow up on us if I don't wrap it up. Let's do this. My goodness. So 3072, thank you. 8112, thank you, darling. I appreciate y'all being with us. 46, 44, I'm gonna have to find you, man. I'm gonna have to put a rope around you or something so you won't get away from me. Thank you so much for your
all right, thank you for the opportunity.
Yes, sir, appreciate you. And so Pastor Waller, one other thing that I wanna do is I want to emphasize the fact that now that we're moving closer toward getting back to our thing, got to find the resources so that we can take advantage of the opportunities. I want to emphasize the fact, you may see in our background on the Facebook that we have primary advocacy, and that's one of our focuses there. So but we appreciate everybody. Pastor, I'm gonna go ahead and roll us out with this commercial. Our time is going to get away from us here. But let's come back Tuesday night. Next Tuesday at 7 o'clock p.m., another conversation on Talk Street. Good conversation. With that, we're going to end with this commercial and go to our website, www.bfcinstitute.com. Learn more about us and support our cause.
Hey, they call me Poop. I'm from these streets. somehow, I lived to see my 18th birthday. I managed to graduate from juvenile detention to adult prison. People try to tell me I should grow up to be a man, but I'm the best man I know. Somebody asked where I see myself 10 years.